Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, to the victors go the spoils. Team Resources has shipped us some dollar bills to go get some food. I know where I'm going, and I know you know where I'm going.
You're getting some noodles from that noodle place?
Heck yeah, I'm getting buttered noodles from Noodles & Company. The real question is, where does Ethan Sachs like to eat?
I don't know. So here's a little tale for you. I went out last night to order some food at this bar that was like 10 minutes from my house, and I went in to pick it up, and like no one has masks on.
Oh yeah,
it's just like everybody eating inside without masks on, and I just didn't realize that was what people were doing.
Yeah, that's definitely what people are doing. You're probably not out in the world as much as I am.
No, I'm not. And then like I'm cooking all my meals at home basically. The only thing I do outside is go grocery shopping now. That's it. Like everything else is just hunkered down in my house. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to go. I honestly didn't even know we had anything on the line other than bragging rights.
I did not either. It was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Well, thank you to Team Resources for that. And very much looking forward to match number three against them.
Absolutely. I told LSV messaged me that, you know, whatever they wanted to buy us lunch. And I was like, not necessary. Not being down 0-2 tastes way better than any meal ever possibly could.
Oh, so true. We recorded our showdown video for CFB YouTube last week, like a couple days afterwards. And I lost to you. We basically had a non-game three. And you were like, sorry about that. I was like, nope. That doesn't matter. I'll lose to you all day after tying up the score against Team Resources. So felt good still to have that under our belt. Ben, I am super pumped to talk about this format with you. I have been drafting up a storm. I did a little gold to mythic run on stream this week, which is great because now I don't have to play best of one anymore because I don't really care about ranking up in mythic. And I am just super pumped to discuss like the moves and shakes that are happening in Kaldheim.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, we got a little bit of housekeeping to do before we dive into our Commons in Context episode. This is a return. We did this about a year ago, I think, for Theros Beyond Death, which was also the like early set of 2020. So we're going to be talking about every single common in the format and breaking it down, where it goes, and talk about them. Because I think, as we keep alluding to, like beyond the top few, they're largely contextual. It's really about finding a home for them. I've been sort of talking on stream this week about not using the B word as in bad. It's just not about that. Like most cards have a home and it's about finding them. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we do that, like I said, a little housekeeping. First things first, the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. You get access to a number of different things depending on which tier you want to hop in at. But everyone gets access to the Lords of Limited Discord, and everyone who joins via the Patreon contributes to our stretch goal, which we are dangerously close to, Ben, an additional monthly episode free of charge to our patrons, giving us a lot of extra space to do maybe some interviews, talk cube, talk some more general limited strategy type stuff, dive deeper than we want to do on the podcast each week. Like I think those monthly bonus episodes are going to be awesome. So if you're interested in contributing to that content, head on over to the Patreon page, see which tier might work for you. And Ben, we have a doozy of a number of folks to welcome to the fold this week. We're going to shout them out on air, so I would ask you to join me in welcoming Sean,
Jonathan,
Alex,
Drew,
Angelo,
Roger,
Daniel,
Michael,
Matthew,
Nathan,
Dizzy Assassin,
Benjamin P,
Elliot,
David,
Luca,
Shade,
John K,
John C,
Aaron,
Richard,
Todd,
Blake,
Benjamin W.
Ethan, wait, what is happening here?
What do you mean? There's back-to-back Benjamin W. and an Ethan?
Yeah.
We did. We had to join the Patreon, Ben, to up those numbers.
So seriously, what do you think the odds are that literally these are in the order that people joined, right?
Yeah, they are.
What are the odds that a Benjamin W. and an Ethan joined back to back? That's got to be astronomical, right?
That is astronomical. Yeah. I should check the Ethan's last initial. See if it lines up there. All right, we got a few more people to round out here. Wu Tings.
Garrett,
John B,
Gurgly,
Simon P,
Simon J,
Alexander,
and Adam.
Thank you. We really appreciate your support.
In addition to the Patreon, podcast now also brought to you by Channel Fireball, channelfireball.com. Best place to go for anything and everything you need. Magic related, Pokemon related, Flesh and Blood related. They've got it all over there. Specifically, Magic is probably what you're after if you're listening to our podcast. And they just recently, this weekend, hosted a release party for Kaldheim, which was pretty sweet. You and I were in the Discord helping with some deck suggestions. And I know you had a chance to play some matches. What was it like?
Yeah, I didn't realize that I missed like playing with paper cards. I have that tactile thing and like shuffling cards. It was fun. I set up a little spell table thing, got my webcam over my desk here and played a couple matches. Got sniped sort of by one of the people we had teched their deck earlier, and then I faced off against them and lost. But that was a really fun best of three match there. And it was just nice to like chat with a couple new folks. It was really enjoyable. It's just nice that that's a thing that exists for these release events, and I look forward to CFB continuing to host those.
Yeah, it was cool. I cracked my packs, built my deck. It was the first packs of Magic that I've cracked in probably since the Theros GP that we did over in New Jersey.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's been over basically a year since we did that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
CFB also has box breaks going on. So if you want to buy into part of a box for Kaldheim or other sets, you know, they've got older things going on. They've got Legends boosters getting cracked that you can buy a card from. You can get in on that action. And I know I had one that went off last night and I still have not checked to watch my video to see what I got open. And I know you were in one as well.
Yeah, I was. I think I want to watch it like on stream or something, but they send you a little section of the VOD of where your box break happened so you can like follow along. So you'll probably get that email today or tomorrow.
Yeah, it said I was going to get it today. So I'm hoping to do that on stream today. Looking forward to that. In addition to that, they've got CFB Pro. You and I are writing content for that each and every week. Alex is as well. So if you're not on CFB Pro, you can sign up for $4.99 a month or $9.99 and get that money back in store credit. So if you're spending any money on Magic cards, CFB Pro is essentially free to you, and you get extra great limited content from Ethan and I. If you do anything over at Channel Fireball, please use code LOL, all caps, to let them know that we sent you there, and we would really appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, and one final thing. This coming week, Ben and I are going to be guesting on Scry Me a River, a fellow podcast in the CFB Podcast Network, hosted by Riley Knight and Dennis Stranjak, and I am super pumped to get to go on their show, Ben.
Yeah, I have been listening since episode one. It's my favorite podcast, I think, right now. It just feels like hanging out with Riley and Dennis. It is pure and utter nonsense most of the time, but then there's like every once in a while some serious advice sprinkled in. It's just a great podcast to feel like you're hanging out with some friends.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to maybe be on a bit of a looser podcast format. You and I try and keep it super tight here, and I'm gonna be excited to try and keep up with Riley and Dennis over on Scry Me a River. So if you're interested in getting any questions out there for us, shoot us a message on Twitter or on our Discord, or reach out on when we're streaming. Any and all that will be fine platforms if you get those questions in before Wednesday the 10th.
Yep. Questions, queries, quandaries, nonsense, all appreciated.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I said, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here. We are going to be running through each and every one of the commons in Kaldheim and discussing where we think they fit. But before that, maybe we should return to a roundtable, Ben. We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, let's do it. Hop on in. This is one of my drafts. You ready to take a seat?
I am.
So pack one, pick one. You grab Showdown of the Scalds, Standard Powerhouse, and I think probably better than every common and uncommon in Kaldheim, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would agree. This card is bonkers.
Yeah, two red white for a saga. Chapter one, exile the top four cards of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play those cards. Chapters two and three, respectively, whenever you cast a spell this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on a target creature you control. Pretty busted, so snap that up, pack one, pick one. And moving on to pack one, pick two, you got a bunch of reasonable options here. So there's a Highland Forest as your snow duel, the red-green snow duel. Struggle for Skemphar, the green fight spell, 3G sorcery, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. Then that creature fights up to one target creature you don't control, and it has Foretell for a green. There's Stalwart Valkyrie, 3W, 3/2 flyer, and you alternate casting cost of 1W if you exile a creature card from your graveyard. There's Dwarven Reinforcements to try to stay red, 3W, Foretell for 1W, and you create 2/2/1 red dwarf berserker creature tokens. There's a Bergstrider, 4 and a blue, 4/4 when ETBs, tap target artifact or creature and opponent controls. If snow mana was spent to cast that spell, the permanent doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step. And then you've got three uncommon lands here. You've got the black green land, the blue green land, and the green white land. I'm going to spare everyone from reading those cards.
Yeah, those are all the spell lands there. The Stronghold, Lajar, Mirror Lake, and Skemphar Elder Hall. Yeah, you have a lot of options here, but this is a great pack, I think, to highlight what we're about to talk about in the meat of the episode, which is that the power level is super flat here. Like, if this is pack one, pick one, let's say the rare is a dud, like the rare is missing from this pack, but let's say the rare is a dud, which there aren't that many of them, but let's say it is, like the Birthing Pod artifact. If that's in the pack, like, I think I'm still taking the snow duel first. And there's a couple things to highlight there, right? Green and blue snow duels are like a cut above the rest, right? It's like Shimmerdrift Vale is the best snow land, period, I think, at least to take early. Then it's green and blue snow duels. And then it's like snow lands that basically aren't white because white doesn't care about snow. And so Highland Forest here is just a good card, period, to see. And I don't really want to take, you know, I think a lot of people might go like, well, I'll take Craven Hulk or Dwarven Reinforcements, or I'll take Bergstrider, or, you know, Stalwart Valkyrie is a good aggressive flyer, or Struggle is a good removal spell or whatever. But like, the snow duel just gives you so many more options, whereas all of those other cards are sort of pigeonholing you a little bit for not a lot of value. You know, I talk a lot about when I review draft logs about what is the reason to get into a color, like this, taking this card as the first card of a color. And none of these cards excite me as being the first card of a color I'm drafting.
Well, and, you know, Shodan of the Skalds is great, and you could make a case for Stalwart Valkyrie, Dwarven Reinforcements to try to stay on track with red or white. But the truth of the matter is there's such good fixing in the format that I'm 100% to play Shodan of the Skalds. I'm either going to be red-white or I'm going to be some green snow deck that can play Shodan of the Skalds.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And so Highland Forest being the land in the pack is sort of like the perfect land for you in a way. Like, it would be that or whatever the Alpine one is, the green-white one. Like, a base green snow land that can splash either half of Shodan is so good for you here.
Right. And it's investing in the future of your draft. And actually is a good card too. I think that's something that other people don't necessarily always understand about the snowlands. They're thinking, ugh, I have to take a land. And I'm thinking, oh, I get to take a snowland here. Right. It's going to be very good for me, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just trying to shift your mindset that way about snowlands.
Well, and there's also this other thing. I talk about this a lot on stream this week too, is that taking the snowland second sends a signal. And even more so when you take a snowland first, if you've ever done that, you just immediately tell the person to your left, I'm crazy. Like, they right, like they look at the pack and they go, oh my god, the snowland's missing. What are they gonna do? They can't do snow stuff. Like, they just know that you're out of your mind and you're taking snow super highly, and that is powerful to be able to send that signal in draft. You just like don't ever really get to do that,
you know. On Scrimy River they talk about power moves. That's a power move, right?
That's
there in
power
draft
move right there. Yeah,
taking the snowland first.
Windmill slam a common.
All right, moving on to pack one, pick three with the Showdown and the Highland Forest in the pile. There's Arctic Tree Line. That's the green-white snow duel. Ooh. So also looking pretty spicy with the Showdown. And then no commons really in contention that are standing out. Uncommons, there's Trickster God Heist. That's the blue-black uncommon duel where you can exchange two creatures, chapter one, exchange non-creatures, chapter two, that share a type. And chapter three, target player loses three life and you gain three life.
Can I shout out this saga here real quick? Because I think I like this card more than anybody else does. And this card takes a lot of setup. Like, you need stuff to donate. I see people like play this in decks where they don't have anything they're willing to give up. But if you have, I think the best two things in blue and black respectively are Karfel Harbinger, which like can help ramp you out early. And then once it's done its job, you can give them a 1/3. Or perfect is Elderfang Disciple, the 1/1 that makes them discard, and then you can gift that away. If you get stuff like that, this card is really good.
Yeah, certainly. You have to do some setup costs, but yeah, if you have those other cards in your deck and you draft appropriately, Trickster God's Heist can be powerful for sure. And there are great bombs running around in the format to steal.
Yeah, you need to steal it and then you can like rebuy it with Master Scald, whatever. There's another, the common in the pack that I'm looking at here also pairs nicely with it, Elderleaf Mentor, that pops out a 1/1 elf, and that's a good thing to gift as well.
Yeah, it definitely goes along with the blue black uncommon saga. That's where, that shows where you've been drafting. Sultai Snow,
me?
Baby.
Who, me? No, never.
So, rest of the uncommons, Blizzard Brawl is here. It's green for a snow sorcery. Target creature you control fights target creature you don't control. If you control three or more snow permanents, the creature you control gets +1/+0 and indestructible until end of turn. And last uncommon, and the best uncommon, Avalanche Caller, 1 and a blue, 1/3, and you can pay 2, have target snow land you control become a 4/4 elemental creature with hexproof and haste until end of turn.
Yeah, there are not many snow payoffs that would make me take them over Arctic Treeline out of this pack after the start, but Avalanche Caller is one of them.
Yep, it's one of the best snow payoffs, one of the best reasons to be snow. And you snap it up here, and I think you're still hoping to put Showdown of the Scalds in your deck, but and you're also thrilled about taking Highland Forest here, right?
Yes.
Taking Avalanche Caller third after cutting a snow land and sending that signal is much better than having, you know, whatever, Dwarven Reinforcements and then feeling awkward about taking Avalanche Caller here.
Yes, I agree completely.
All right, that gives you a little taste of how we're approaching Kaldheim. This ended up with a pack one, pick four, Glimpse the Cosmos into a Bergstrider, into some snowlands, and I ended up playing actually five color snow here that could actually splash Showdown of the Scalds for red and white. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I'm looking at the final deck pick here, courtesy of 17lands.com. It's nice that all that stuff is in one browser here. But yeah, your base blue, and then you've got Showdown of the Scalds, double binding the old gods. That's pretty sweet. And then a lot of good fixing here. Replicating Ring. Replicating Ring, I think, is drastically underrated right now.
It's really good.
It's like basically better than Glittering Frost, and Glittering Frost is very good.
Yeah, I think I'm a little cooled down on those cards, mostly because I've been trying to draft two color decks to get some other info for the podcast. But if you're interested in leaning towards multicolored snow, those cards are invaluable.
Yeah, agree completely. Well, that's nice. All right, so let's dive in here for a little bit of a format rundown, like just a check in here before we get into the commons. What's been going on for you in Kaldheim this week?
I have been losing a lot of drafts in Kaldheim this week, but I feel like I'm getting some good information and I feel like I'm seeing what's good, you know, from my opponent's side of the battlefield. And I've gotten, you know, some good decks of my own that have just not performed in best of one, which is going to happen sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
So I've sort of come pretty strongly to the conclusion that blue-red's the best deck at this point. I think blue and red both have the best uncommons sort of from an intrinsic power level and as far as working together cohesively in a two-color deck. And I think it can play a lot of different ways. I think it can be blue-red tempo. You know, if you've got the Bergstrider game plan, you've got some good threats. I think you can be controlling if you've got the Behold the Multiverses, the good removal. There's just a lot of different things the deck can do, and a lot of it is at common and uncommon. You definitely want Agar, and you definitely want Mistwalkers, and I think you're hoping to get some squashes late. But when all that stuff comes together, your deck feels like a machine.
Yeah, and I think I agree 100%. I saw you write this in the show notes, and I concur. I will back up that I agree that blue-red is the best deck. I haven't played it very much. I haven't played against it very much, but I do think that it's a really strong deck and it exists at common. And I think it does the thing that a lot of your decks want to do in this format, which is has a lot of pockets of synergy or overlapping synergy, right? It can do the snow thing. It can do the giant thing. It can do a changeling thing. And there's a lot of stuff wrapped up in blue red that complements the other things very nicely.
Right. The other thing I was thinking about with both blue and red, they're the colors that feel like they get to do snow, but also do things outside of snow well in addition to that. Like, I don't necessarily feel that way about green or black or white quite so much, that they get to do it all. It feels like they've got more areas of snow or non-snow that they specialize in.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Speaking of snow, it still feels a little bit underdrafted to me. What are your thoughts on that? What have you been feeling in the queues?
I would say still feels a lot underdrafted, honestly. Like, it really, you gotta have people taking snowlands higher, and maybe it just is never gonna happen. Maybe the at least on Arena, you know, I think on MTGO it's a different thing, but you and I aren't playing on there right now. But on Arena, I just think they're not being taken as high as they should be.
Yep, I agree. Green-Black Elves, I've played a little bit with, and it sounds like you have as well. It's super real if you get the rare payoffs. So Skemphar Shadow Sage, that's the uncommon that drains or gains life equal to the number of creatures that share a type that you control. That plus Elvish Warmaster, which is the rare 1-green 2/2, has the activated ability of 7 mana to give your elves +2/+2 and death touch until end of turn. And whenever another elf enters the battlefield for the first time each turn, you get a 1/1 elf token. That spews a wide board of elves pretty quickly, and then you can just dome your opponent with Skemphar Shadow Sage. Had a pretty sweet deck that had those two cards in it together.
Yeah, I haven't had the pleasure of playing it myself, but I've faced a number of good green-black decks, and they play out pretty aggressively when they work well. I think Death Knell Berserker at common is pretty key there. I also think Skemphar Shadow Sage plus Return Upon the Tides sort of feels like reanimating Grey Merchant sometimes. Like, you get that back, you get two elves along with it, and then you like dome your opponent for five. Been impressed by that. I do think black green is real if you start off with one of those like rare payoffs.
Yeah, it's been very fun to play. Talk to me about the gold vein pick hotness. I have seen the Destiny tweets and I have lost to some gold vein picks. What have your experiences been with the card?
So I did have the chance to draft, I pack one, pick one the other day, a Runeforge champion. So that's the rare white 2/3 for 3 mana. When it enters the battlefield, you search your library or graveyard for a rune and put it into your hand. And then your runes only cost a single colorless mana to cast. So I pack one, pick one that, and then pack one, pick two, a gold vein pick. And I was like, I've seen the Deathsea tweets. I want to try this deck. And it's real. It's a very good deck. I don't think gold vein, I'm not on gold vein pick by itself. I think there's a lot of talk about, like, just watching Deathsea's stream. I think the man is just a take master, but he was like, gold vein pick is the best common in the set. Like, I think that's a little bit extreme for my money, but I think it has a place in that multicolor rune deck, or it's not really a multicolor rune deck, but you're playing any runes that you get because that creates the treasure and it's a place to put the runes, and putting the runes on equipment is very real. I also think the crown is key. So I think if you see the Runeforge champion early, if you've seen the rune crown, the uncommon equipment early, that's a reason to go into the rune deck in my mind. Because I think a lot of it, other than snapping up the runes, a lot of it exists at common in terms of, you know, you get your wing equipment or you get the pick or whatever, and you just like get a nice curve of creatures. And I think that's a really good deck.
Yeah, the runes were a question mark for me last week. I have been very impressed with the runes playing this week. I've had a chance to play with some of them and they've been very good for my opponents. Mm-hmm. I will say, we should say what Goldvein pick does. It's a 2-mana equipment that has equip 1 and gives the equipped creature +1/+1. And when the equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, you make a treasure token. It feels like there's a couple things that it does. One, if you get it on an evasive creature, it snowballs pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And it gives your opponent a real mana advantage. Also, I've seen decks that use the gold vein pick to splash the uncommon lands. Like that you can just go nuts with the activations of the uncommon lands if you're picking pick aggressively and putting it on evasive creatures. That's been pretty impressive for my opponents. And I do think, you know, for whatever, you know, how much of a meme it is, pack one, pick one, pick one has a pretty nice ring to it.
No, thank you. I can't imagine taking pick over a snowland in my life, but that I respect the meme for sure. Another deck that I've been impressed by and I've had a chance to play is Blue-Green Changelings. And now again, these are sort of like these subset decks, like whatever rune deck it is, if it's base red-white, this Blue-Green Changelings deck, it exists at rare. The reason to get into it is for cards like Reflections of Lit Jara, which is the 5-mana enchantment. You name a creature type, and then whenever you cast a creature of that type, you get a copy of that creature. Bears of Lit Jara, the rare Blue-Green Saga that can turn all of your changelings into 4/4s on chapter 2. Like, going like Mistwalker into Bears of Lit Jara is insanely powerful. I had the World Tree, which lets you search up god cards if you have, you know, like the double Wooburg activation for it. I've done that. I've like pulled 4 changelings out of my deck. So changelings is a real deck, and I think once you get a rare payoff, it exists at common enough that you can get that deck to come together.
Yeah, I also had a great experience with a Blue-Green Changeling deck. I had sort of a hybrid Elves Giants deck. It was pretty sweet. So I had another Elvish Warmaster that's that rare. I also had a couple Glimpse the Cosmos, and then I had Bears of Lit Jara. It was just a really sweet deck, and then had the Mistwalkers and the other things to support it.
Nice.
Equipment has been impressive to me, just as far as in the format in general, much more so than I would have thought going into the format. Just the uncommon cycle of equipment, Runed Crown being great, you know, the pickaxe being good. I think the +1/+0 flying equipment is good. Have you had that same experience?
Yeah, I have for sure. It makes Broken Wings feel much more main deckable to me as well. But I also think that's largely, the equipment being good is largely due to the format being grindy. And so you have time to like move your Dwarven Hammer around for 3 mana, you know, and that feels not like a tempo negative thing to do. Whereas I think we all sort of saw these high equip costs or high re-equip costs and were wary of stuff. And it just, you have the mana for it a lot of the time.
Yes, there's so many ways to generate mana as well.
Yeah. You know, since seeing the truth from Mr. Plow himself, Andrew Beckstrom in the Lords versus Resources showdown, I have gotten a chance to do Ox Plow. And I can say it's pretty real. I don't think it's a deck that comes together very often because you ideally have multiple plows. But, you know, that Ox Plow, and then you get a Raider's Carve in there as well. Like, when you attack someone with Plow on turn 3 and then have, like, you know, 4 mana available, because ideally you go Plow on 2, Land Drop on 3, Ox on 3, and then you have 4 mana to do stuff with, it's pretty explosive.
That sounds very explosive. That has not happened to me yet, and I've not done it yet. I'm looking forward to doing it, and I am not at all looking forward to it happening to me.
Yeah. The way I got into it was, like, it was a draft with very little direction, and then I knew that there was an ox in my first pack, and I saw a plow, like, pick six. And I was like, this is a thing to do. This is a direction for a deck, and I didn't have one. But I think that's sort of, it has to be like a perfect storm of you don't have a direction and you see the plow early. But that can happen. So look out for it if you're drafting a lot.
Yeah. And just in general, as far as like the format, you know, we've talked about some decks here. Are you still navigating drafts with the approach of, you know, if there's nothing exciting in the pack, you're going to take snowlands and try to draft multicolored snow?
Yeah. I have been open to aggro a little bit more. Like my last four-ish drafts were just like two color decks. Started off with like a Fearless Liberator, the 2/1 with Boast, and it makes a 2/1 for 3 mana. Like when I start off with something like that, like I feel less bad about it. And I'm also then more inclined to just be like, maybe I can just draft a streamlined deck that takes advantage of this powerful uncommon rather than just like abandon it for some snow stuff. So I think that's partially just like trying out other things. But I still feel like for my money, right, if I sat down and you were like, what deck do you want to draft? Like, I want to draft a good snow deck. I think that's the most powerful deck in the format still.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense to me. I have been impressed with two color decks when they've been very streamlined, you know, when Blue Red Giants comes together or Green Black Elves, you know, the decks we've talked about. When it's obvious that that two color pair is open at your table, I think those decks also really shine. And I've been trying to get into those a little bit more myself.
Yeah, people are asking me like, well, what do you think are the best decks in the format? And I like to answer 5-color snow, 4-color snow, and 3-color snow.
So if you have the choice between snow and giants, are you on snow?
Yeah, I am.
I think I would rather play giants myself.
Yeah, they're both very powerful. I mean, like, you know, giants maybe comes together more often, like has less of a chance of train wrecking. But like, if you're saying you get to draft a good deck of this type, then I would say snow.
Yeah, makes sense.
All right, well, let's dive in here. Let's look at all of these commons in Kaldheim, and we're going to be looking at them under the lens of 5 different categories here. So the first one will be good in every deck. And that essentially will always line up with what we think are the top commons, but then also might have a little bit of a surprise in there. But they're mostly just going to be like the best common, something that you would, you know, load up on, have no problem having as many copies of in any deck of that color.
Next is top tier, which are cards that are almost always included in your deck, but some slight considerations during the draft or deck building to really make them work in your deck.
Next, we'll be looking at most contextual. These are the cards that vary the most based on how the draft and how you're going to build your deck at the end of that draft.
And then lastly, filler, which is just anything that's replaceable or below replacement level, essentially.
And then we'll look at, you know, some are actual unplayable cards or sideboard material if you're playing best of three.
I think really important to note that common wise, pretty much the good in every deck should pull you into a color. And past that, you really want to let rares and uncommons dictate which of the most contextual commons you want to pick.
Right. Like thinking about when this is the first card of that color you're taking, like, why are you moving into that color? And it really shouldn't be for anything other than those good in every deck cards at common or higher rarity, like Ben said.
And that kind of shows where you should take the snowlands then. So we're essentially recommending that you take snowlands over everything except the good in every deck cards, and maybe even sometimes over those, depending on, you know, what sort of snow payoffs you have.
Right. And I think that that might be the case for our first card here up in white. The only card we have under the good in every deck umbrella is Bound in Gold.
Yeah, I think Pacifism ended up as the top white common reluctantly, and I think this has been impressive.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, like the fact that it can hit any permanent, shuts off re-equip stuff, shuts off vehicles, and shut off spell lands. But mostly you're popping it on a creature. And I think that that it's quite good, but I'm probably still taking those blue and green snow duels over this.
I agree. I dislike white enough that I would not want Bound in Gold to be the card that's pushing me into white.
Yeah, so I think here on Lords Limited, we are still on white as the weakest of the 5 colors.
Yes, that is true for me.
All right, what's going on in top tier?
All right, so in top tier, we've got Doomscar Oracle at first, 2 and a white for the 3/2 with Foretell of a white. And whenever you cast your second spell each turn, you gain 2 life. I know you've had a lot of good experiences with the card. Can you talk to me about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's still like just what I pegged it doing with that single white Foretell ability. Like it's slotting in on curve for you, Foretell this on 2, and then on turn 3, you can use all your mana to either Foretell something else. So it's good in blue-white Foretell, obviously. These 3/2 bodies in the format in general just like play offense and defense really well. A 3/2 body blocks well, but also a 3/2 attacks pretty well. Like that's a fine stat for a creature for 3 mana or 1 mana on turn 3, as this can be. Gaining you life if you're ending up in a race situation, it just is like good, like this could really go in good in every deck, but I'm sure there are going to be times where you're base white and you feel like, eh, I don't really want to be foretelling on two. Like, I'd rather be super aggressive and affecting the board. I could see it not slotting into some of the most aggressive decks or some sort of streamlined game plan decks where this doesn't fit, but like good in double spell, good with foretell, etc.
All right, makes sense.
Iron Verdict doesn't quite get into good in every deck for me, just because I think the most aggressive decks don't want a deal five to a tapped creature effect. But this is really, really strong. This is still in the top few white commons for me.
Next, we've got Master Skull. It's 4 and a white 4/4 when it ETBs. If you exile a creature from your graveyard, you can rebuy an artifact or an enchantment. This is absurd if you've got the good sagas going on and you should go out of your way to pick it up. And it's almost at its best as a splash in snow decks that have the good sagas like Binding of the Old Gods.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, if you have the black-white saga, you can sort of loop that with this. What's the other one? Cardor's Vicious Return. Chapter 3 also returns a creature. So that's really good with Master Skald. You can do a little loop-de-loop stuff there.
And lastly, we've got Stalwart Valkyrie. This is 3 and a white 3/2 flyer, and you can pay 1 and a white, exile a creature from your graveyard to cast it for 2. It doesn't really cost 2 mana, though. I mean, it sort of does starting on turns 4 and 5, but you need to think of this as a double spell card, not as a 2-mana play.
I honestly feel like this might belong in most contextual. Like, this doesn't feel like it's in the same tier as Oracle Verdict and Master Skald to me.
Well, you have to be aggressive to maximize it, right? You're only playing this in decks that want to force the opponent to trade off creatures.
Right, and so I think that is most contextual, because we're going to look at, you know, the first up here, we've got Battlefield Raptor. Now, so what are the things that I'm thinking about if I want to put a 1-mana 1/2 in my deck? You know, I want to be aggressive. I want to care about double spell. I want to care about auras or equipment, like ways to suit this up. Am I white green and I have the 2-drop changeling that can put a counter on this? Like, there are a lot of things that you need to make Battlefield Raptor a good card in your deck.
Yes, and I think it does play very well with Goldbane Pick, speaking of earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, turning into a 2/3 flyer that gives you a mana every turn, mm-hmm, turns that into a real card.
Yeah, I played 2 of the Battlefield Raptors in that rune deck I talked about earlier, and I don't think I actually needed them in that deck, but I see their place with the Goldbane Pick for sure.
Codespell Cleric is up next. That's the white 1/1 that goes in double spell. If you cast it as your second spell, you get to put a +1/+1 counter on it or something else, and it's got vigilance as well. So I think the best home for this is black white. Maybe you'll play it in red white aggro decks too, but you definitely want to be aggressive with a super low curve.
Mm-hmm. And I think also interested about going tall a little bit. Like, if you are trying to like suit up a raptor, this is again another good like 1/2 punch with the raptor. Got Giant Ox on here. I think this goes with the plow. It goes with whatever that vehicle deck we talked about. Get a couple plows, get a Raider's Carve. And then I do think there, I've faced it, I've played it. I do think it has a home, but like that's the only home, I think.
Gold Maul Champion's up next. That's the 2/3 boaster that can tap down a creature. And I think that's card's fine. Plays very well in an aggro deck, but you want to make sure you're aggressive before you're happy about playing the card.
And I also think you want to consider your curve. I found a lot of decks can get clogged at the 3-mana spot, you know, especially if you think about Doomscar Oracle being in the top tier here and competing at 3CMC with the champion. But I've seen it do work. I've played with it and it's done work, and I think it has a home for sure. Starnheim Courser, again, do you care about being aggressive? What's your curve consideration? Here's another 3CMC play for you as a 2/2 flyer. Do you care about the cost reduction? Are you playing a bunch of auras and equipment or artifacts in general? Like, some, maybe you've got a 2/3 foretell creature and you want to make that cost 2 instead of foretelling it and then having it cost 0, whatever. Like, these are the things you want to think about when you're putting this card in your deck.
I've not been very impressed with the Courser. Could almost see that going in filler, to be honest. Like, Battlefield Raptor is just much better if you want that type of evasive threat, right?
I agree, but I do think the general like 3-mana 2/2 flyer is like whatever doesn't quite apply in this format.
Okay. All right, Valor of the Worthy is up next. This is white for an aura, and equipped creature gets +1/+1. And when, if it would leave the battlefield, you get a 1/1 spirit creature token with flying. I saw a tweet from Ari Lax that said, according to 17 lands data, that if you put this in your deck, it's the 5th best common like to include in your deck according to win rate for white decks. But if you draw it, it's like the 12th best. So you want to build your white decks like they want Valor of the Worthy, but to then not include Valor of the Worthy.
Yeah, I also think this is good for double spelling, but I guess I don't want to draw it according to that data.
Yeah.
Speaking of double spelling with these single mana plays, Wings of the Cosmos, this is the +1/+3 flying trick for one mana. Again, are you aggressive? Do you want a double spell? This backs up some boasters quite nicely because it can protect your boasters for one mana while still being able to activate their abilities. That's nice too.
And Warhorn Blast is last. That's the +2/+1 anthem at instant speed with Vertel. I think, again, you really want to be aggressive. Ideally, you want to be going wide, probably in green-white, maybe in white-red with some Dwarven reinforcements, that type of thing. But if you're looking to get in that last push with some evasive stuff that you've got, you know, Battlefield Raptors laying over, can definitely do some work.
There's a really nice thing that red-white specifically gets to do in this format, which is take advantage of a number of tricks that are all differently difficult to play around. Like, your opponent makes an attack and you have to think about Run Amok, you have to think about Warhorn Blast, you have to think about Wings of the Cosmos, and your blocks are going to be different based on what you think they have, or how you want to play is going to be different based on what you think they have, or maybe one thing is something you can't play around, whatever, but like that sort of suite of tricks, I think all makes them slightly better because they all exist.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
And then we'll just round things out here with filler. So sort of interesting, I was listening to this week's episode of Limited Resources, and LSV is pretty high on Axeguard Braggart and God's Hall Guardian, and I think you and I have both moved those down a little bit. Like, those feel fine to me, but not exciting.
I have been a little scared of opponents' Axebane Braggarts at times. Not that it makes me want to pick it highly or anything, but just that it is a relevant threat that can snowball. God's Hall Guardian, I have not been particularly impressed with.
Yeah, and then we have the two drops here in white, which are both good. Beskar Shieldmate, the 2/1 that dies into a 1/1, and Story Seeker, the 2/2 with lifelink. But like, you know, there's largely interchangeable and just like curve filler consideration stuff.
Right. But I think if you're playing white, you need to make sure you have a good card, and your white decks are likely to include, you know, some number of Beskar Shieldmates and Story Seekers.
Yes, I agree.
Lastly, the unplayable sideboards, we've got Invoke the Divine. I think if you're playing best of three, you would want to pick those up if you're white, because there are a lot of good artifacts and enchantments running around. Mm-hmm. And then Revitalize just does not have a home. Why is that in the format?
I mean, I think it's like bait for double spell stuff, like, but it's just filler. Like, do not play this card. It's worse than filler, honestly.
Yep.
All right, blue. Good in every deck. Behold the Multiverse. Though I will say, Ben, I believe Packmate has unseated Behold as the best common in the set for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm on the wolf train there. But Behold the Multiverse and Mistwalker, good in every blue deck.
Yeah, both those cards are insane. Top tier, I think Bergstrider is my number three blue common now. That's the 4/4 that taps something down. And if you play it with snow mana, they don't get to untap it. Card's a house, feels very Chillbringer-esque. Yeah. And again, is just a complete monster in blue-red giants. Mm-hmm. And then we've also got Augury Raven there, 3/3, 3/3 flyer with Vertel, 1/1. Card's fine. You're almost always going to play it, but it's not exciting.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's like, it is top tier, but it's like the least exciting top tier card you could have, I would think.
Yep.
All right, so moving on to the most contextual card. First up, Bind the Monster. I'm interested to see where you have this card, Ben. The main consideration here for me is my removal suite. I would put this at filler, honestly. Like, I'm hoping to not run it, but I will play it if I feel like I'm in a deck that doesn't have, you know, good removal, or I need a way to deal with something big. Like, I don't have that squash or whatever, but it's not a card that I'm very excited about.
I think the first copy's fine, and I think if you're in blue white, you know, maybe you run 2-3 copies if you've got some life gain running around, but again, not a super high pick. Next is Depart the Realm. That's the bounce spell. So if you're tempo oriented, you've got some sagas that you want to bounce, you know, your blue white Vertel, and you want some more Vertel spells for your Vega, I think it does work. I have not particularly found myself, you know, missing it at the end of the draft, but it's a playable card.
Yeah, this is a card. This is the first time in a while where I felt like the blue bounce spell wasn't that great. And maybe it's just because I don't think blue, it's best when you care about it as a tempo play. And I don't feel like blue plays a tempo game very often.
Yeah, it's pretty much blue red giants that wants to play a tempo game. And I've been impressed with Run Ashore in blue red giants as well. Speaking of.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, we've got that here as well. Same questions. Tempo oriented. Do you have sagas to bounce? Do you have ETBs you want to bounce? You know, getting your stuff out from under an enchantment based removal spell is nice too, while putting something on the top or bottom of their library.
Well, and also I think the format feels pretty grindy, right? So you don't want the card disadvantage of Depart the Realm quite as much as you normally would.
Right, exactly. Whereas, you know, the games are going late, and so you can pump 6 mana into Run Ashore. I agree. Get Disdainful Stroke up next. How much are you operating at instant speed is basically my consideration for running the counter spells in this format, because I think Disdainful Stroke almost always will have a target. And it's so weird. Like, if my green opponent foretells on 2, then I'm so likely to go, am I supposed to hold up Disdainful Stroke on 3 to counter their Packmate here? Like, that's come up for me a lot. Like, because people are playing these expensive spells that are cheaper, right? You can put all these 4 CMC foretell cards in your deck that Disdainful Stroke gets. It's more about like how much flexibility do I have passing with two mana up?
Right, but you shouldn't be looking to run Disdainful Stroke necessarily.
I think the first copy you can say that you'd be looking to run it.
If you're instant speed, but like you're not going out of your way to pick it. You just will put it in your deck if you have a lot of instant speed stuff going
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
Karfel Harbinger is up next. That's the one in a blue 1/3 that can tap for blue to pay for foretell or instants and sorceries. And basically, I think you want to be blue-white, blue-black, and that's pretty much the only homes this card has.
Yeah, I would say you could have blue-red versions as well that have a lot of, you know, instant speed stuff or a lot of spells, a lot of beholds and demon bolts, that type of deal.
That's fair.
But yeah, I think the card's pretty good. If you've flashback Glimpse of the Cosmos with Karfel Harbinger, you know the power of this little mana dork. This adding blue and not colorless is a big game changer.
Yeah, for sure.
Litjara Kinseekers, that's the 2/4 changeling that if you have three types when it comes into play as a 3/5 and scries one. Again, do you care about types? That's the big thing here. And I guess also curve, because the 4-mana slot can get a little clogged, though not quite, because a lot of the 4-mana plays are foretell stuff.
I've been impressed with the old Kinseeker. You know, if you go any creature on 2 into Mistwalker, Kinseeker is turned on, which has been a pretty impressive curve to me. And 3/5 blocks everything in the format.
Right. And 5, I mean, 4 is sort of the magic number, but then 5 is really the magic number because you get out of Demon Bolt range. That's pretty huge there, too.
Right, and you block your opponent's Bergstriders, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Pilfering Hawk's up next. It's 1 and a blue for the 1/2 flyer, and you can loot by tapping it and paying a snow mana. I think this is pretty important in snow decks because you generally have a lot of air in snow decks. Like, oftentimes, you're essentially running, like, 20 or 21 mana sources just because you've got Glittering Frost and you've got Replicating Rings in addition to needing to hit your land drops and that sort of thing. So it can be really key to help mitigate flood in the snow decks, but you should not think about this as an early play. Like, it's not a good blocker, that sort of thing. It literally is filtering.
And it's a one of, if you don't get the other good blue card draw spells, like if you don't get loaded up on Beholds or Glimpses, then you're like, all right, I'll play this Hawk happily. Raven Form, again, you're thinking about your removal suite here. Do you need a catch-all removal spell? How well does your deck mitigate the 1/1 flyer that you're giving your opponent? That's what I'm thinking about. And I'm really only happy to main deck one copy of this, if any.
Yes, I agree. Last, we've got Frostpeak Yeti. This is the 3 and a blue 3/3, and you can pay 1 and a snow to make it unblockable until end of turn. This has done a lot of work for me in the snow mirror. I've been fine including it, you know, as a last card or something in a snow deck. And I think if you're playing best of three and you're a snow deck, you actively want to look to pick this up to have it in the sideboard to bring in against other snow decks, because it's a must kill threat in decks that are often like finisher light, which is pretty important.
Yeah. So that brings us to the filler category. First up, we've got Brine Barrow Intruder. This is the Zulaport Duelist here. 1 blue for a 1/2 flash. Creature gets -2/-0. You know, if you need a little bit of defensive speed, think about this as a combat trick with upside, not like a one draw.
Yeah, I am hoping to not put that card in my deck, I think, generally. Draugr Thought Thief, the 3/2 that lets you look at the card. Again, total filler.
I've been like slightly impressed with this in some blue black decks. The fact that this also gets buffed by Narfi is kind of nice because it's a zombie. But I agree. I'm not looking to pick these up in any respect. I kind of want to move this next card down to unplayable. Mists of Litjara has been really bad. This is the 1 and a blue enchantment, -3/-0 with flash. Like, this card is blech.
It does work against aggro,
I guess.
Strategic Planning, again, filler. Undersea Invader, the 4 blue 5/6 that ETBs tapped. Total filler.
Yeah. And the only unplayable / sideboard card is Annul. I don't even think I would ever side this in.
No. Way too contextual.
All right. What's going on with black?
Good in every deck. We've got Feed the Serpent, 2 black, instant, exile a creature or planeswalker. And I think, you know, exile here feels pretty important, especially against the snow decks, because a lot of times, again, I felt decks are sometimes threat light or relying on some bombs and some ways to recur them. Mm-hmm. And so feed exiling has been pretty relevant.
Top tier, we've got 3 cards here: Elderfang Disciple, Jarl of the Forsaken, and Skull Raid. You know, just slight considerations here. I honestly think like Elderfang Disciple might just be good in every black deck. I guess if you're like aggressive black, you don't want the 2-mana 1/1 that much. Jarl's really good. Again, like pairs well with the Elderfang Disciples if you've got stuff that's like incidentally dealing damage to things, like maybe 2/1 dwarf tokens floating around. And again, Skull Raid, very, very good 2/1. Like you said, this might be the second best black common last week, and I'm kind of there for it.
It's really good. I mean, it's backbreaking in the control mirrors when you nab your opponent's last two cards, or, you know, even in those control mirrors, they care about land drops too. So just like firing this off and getting two random cards often does something as well. And then it also mitigates the drawback of, you know, just being card advantage late in the game.
Yeah. So like all of these, you know, two for one-y or whatever, like Yarrow playing nicely with other instant speed foretell stuff, like all these cards are just really, really strong. But there are just slight considerations for deck building, I think, that make them not quite good in every deck.
Yeah, and then moving on to most contextual, we've got Deathknell Berserker. So you really want to be an aggressive black deck, I think, before you're excited about Deathknell Berserker, which is probably going to be black-red, black-green, maybe black-white. Mm-hmm. And then do you have those pickaxes? Do you have a Runed Crown? Do you have ways to make this, you know, three power?
This is like a plan at common, I think, for a lot of decks. I've been really impressed with Deathknell Berserker, gets a counter from the green, two drop changeling, put an equipment on it that gives a plus one or plus one, plus oh, and flying, just ways to pump it, using the demonic gifts in combat to have it trade, make a 2-2 and come back. Like, there's a lot of stuff that happens with this card that I think makes it good.
Yeah, I think that is Demonic Gift's best home, is in tandem with Deathknell Berserker. And, you know, if you've got other creatures that have good ETBs, or if you're maybe, you know, a snow deck that has some key cards that you really want to try to save, although I think Snakeskin Veil is probably a better effect for that than Demonic Gifts, but that sort of thing.
Yeah. Karfel Kennelmaster is up next. I think this is a really good aggro curve topper. So again, if you're black green or black red aggro, or maybe black white aggro, getting a couple of these in your five drop slot is really strong. But I think, you know, as you'll see, there are just these like five mana plays at common for every color, right? You've got the 5/5 in green, you've got the 5/4 in red. And I think it's important to like figure out what your deck wants the most when you're getting to that spot on your curve.
Mm-hmm. Koma's Faithful's up next. This is 2 and a black for the 3/1 with lifelink. And when it dies, each player mills three cards. I have not loved this card myself. What are your thoughts on it?
I think, again, the things I'm thinking about are graveyard synergies. So am I trying to recur stuff? Do I have stuff that I'm interested in getting in my graveyard incidentally? Do I have a way down in my deck? So I want to get, you know, a creature in my graveyard that way, or multiple creatures in my graveyard to fuel multiple way downs. Defensive speed, you know, there's not a lot of stuff that punishes one toughness in the format. So if you want something just to block on turn three, this is really good as a three power thing with lifelink.
Yeah, that's fair. I am probably too low on that card.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's not, it could be filler-ish, but it does, I think, do enough little things. It also has types. It's an elf. So yeah, I think it does enough little things that it's most contextual for me.
Priest of the Haunted Edge is up next. This is 1 and a black for the 0/4, and you can tap, sacrifice it at sorcery speed to give target creature -X -X, where X equals the number of snow lands you have. This card is very good in a snow deck, but I think you really want to be base black in your snow deck before you're really excited about it, and you need to be in the 8 to 10 snow range. A lot of things have to go right before Priest is a great card for you, and I think you should be planning to pick it on the wheel.
I agree with all of that. I have splashed it. I think that because you just think about it as a, like, whatever, a suspend removal spell that can block or whatever. Like, I think it's a fine splash in blue-green, but you need, like, I feel like minimum 7 snowlands, and that can count Glittering Frosts to turn stuff into snowlands, but like, you need that to be high. This the fail case of this, like only dealing with X1s or X2s, that's not what you want out of this. Speaking of way down with the Koma's Faithful, again, creature count is the biggest thing for me. I have found it hard in black decks to have high creature counts. I think you really want to be aware of your creature count before you're putting way downs in your deck.
Right. And I think you also want to be aware of the number of cards that want to exile a creature from your graveyard for an effect, because those get worse the more of them that you jam in there. Like, there's tension in black green with way down and Masked Vandal being in the same deck.
Right. And I would much rather give that creature up to the Vandal than to the way down.
Drag Recruiter is last here in most contextual. It's 3 and a black for the 3/3, and you can boast for 3 and a black to return a creature from your graveyard to your hand. This has been a must kill threat, sort of, if it's got attacks. It's weird. You want it most in a deck that's got removal to clear the way for it, or, you know, tricks to let you boast and rebuy it or win a combat step. But the 3 and a black on the recursive part has been a bit of a bottleneck for me.
Yeah, I agree. But I do think that sort of must kill feeling has come up enough for me that I've got my eye on this card. I don't know quite where it's at its best. Maybe it's a key piece for like just Dimir value based decks as a one of. But I do think it does feel like when it hits the battlefield for my opponent, I'm like, uh-oh, what have I already tried to kill? And what are they about to get back?
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right, so that's going to bring us on to filler. First up is Dread Rider. You know, some of these could be contextual. I feel like the tiebreaker for me a lot of the times with these is like, do I end a draft and wish I had this? And I don't think a 3-7 for 6 is something I'm like, oh, darn, I missed out on this. But this can just sort of be your top end win condition sometimes if you don't get there with like a busted rare or something.
Yep, that's been my experience as well. Grim Dragger is up next. This looks like it goes in snow, but really you just don't care about it at all, has been my experience. The 2 and a black 3/2, and it's got the snow activated ability to give it +1/+0 in menace.
Yeah, you play it in snow, but you aren't mad if you don't end up with it. Same with Infernal Pet has underperformed for me, even in like black white double spell. I don't know. Like it has felt a little awkward, especially if you're on the draw.
I have been on the receiving end of multiples of them from an opponent and they did work is what I would say. Like it got to the point where like if my opponent could double spell again, I was going to die. So I think it is a black white gold card, and I think you're probably playing them in the deck most of the time, but I don't have a lot of data on my end casting the card.
I'm super down on Raise the Draugr too. Probably best in like a black red berserker thing or black green elves.
Yeah, it's done work for me in black green elves.
Okay.
And lastly, we've got Village Rites here, the black instant, sack a creature to draw 2 cards. I have seen some sack and steal stuff with the Act of Treason effect in red.
Okay, that seems a little dicey to me, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, but I think generally filler, and you're hoping to not play it.
Yeah, unplayable, Dogged Pursuit, Dusk Wielder, the 1 mana 1/2, and Wither Crown. Don't
put Wither Crown in your decks, people.
Yeah, these are 3 not good cards.
Yeah, so Wither Crown's the thing that I don't even know what it does. It's just already categorized as unplayable.
The base power
makes the creature power 0.
Yeah.
And you can keep it. You have to sacrifice it unless you pay a life.
Yeah. I've had people put this on my Icehide Trolls. Yikes. Big yikes, folks. Okay. Looking at red, good in every deck. Demon Bolt, obviously. And Frostbite. Shock is good in this format, folks. You don't need to worry about having a lot of snowlands turning this into a lightning bolt. Shock just hits a lot of stuff.
Yep, agreed. Top tier, we've got Squash. I mean, generally you want to be giants or have changelings to make it work, but if you fulfill those conditions, you're very happy, and it's also just acceptable, I think, to pay 5 mana for the card.
Mm-hmm. This is, I think, my hottest take here for commons, Ben, is Dwarven Reinforcements is a card I'm very high on. I think 2/2s for 1 card is like very relevant. There's a lot of 3/2s floating around, not a lot of ways to punish X1s. These can double block to kill an X4 creature. Like, I think Dwarven Reinforcements is something a lot of people are sleeping on right now. It's a good aggressive card, and it's a good defensive card.
I love that card. I'm with you. Next up, we've got Tuskiri Firewalker. It's 2 and a red for the 3/2 and has Boast for 1. Exile the top card of your library, and you can play it this turn. Card's very good. I think you want to try to clear the way for it. You want to have combat tricks, but you're playing it in almost every red deck unless you're like a derpy red-green snow deck.
This again feels like one of those must-kill cards. Like it hits the battlefield for my opponent, I'm like, ah, dang it. What am I supposed to do about this in the next turn cycle?
Mm-hmm.
Last up, Axeguard Cavalry. This is one of my favorite cards I've come up on quite a bit here. The 2-mana 2/2, tap to give something haste until end of turn. I think this is just like a rock-solid 2-drop in basically any red deck that's interested in attacking.
Yep, agreed.
The reason it's top tier and not good in every deck is like sometimes you are red, green, snow, and then you don't really care about cavalry that much.
Moving on to the most contextual cards, Craven Hulk, that's the 3 and a red, 4/4, and can't block alone. I mean, I think if you want to be aggressive, you care about your curve and giants, like this is a great card in the 4-drop slot in a blue red giants deck.
Yeah, this could even be top tier, honestly. The only times I don't like it again are when I'm like a red snow defensive deck because I get nervous about a card that can't stabilize me at 4 mana. But otherwise, just this card is huge. I really like the velocity cards in red, Immerstorm Raider and Seize the Spoils. Like ways to churn through your deck, I think, is quite good. This just being a nice little thing to start off your curve with in an aggressive deck to mitigate flood or whatever. I think both of those cards have a nice home in a lot of decks.
And both nice in red-green base snow decks, too,
yes,
to give you filtering and be a speed bump, you know, in the case of Immerstorm Raider. Run Amok, sort of the truth, right? If you want to be red aggro, and, you know, it feels like you have to be very aggressive before you're interested in including this. But if you are, it's one of the best ways to punish the derpy decks around.
Ryan Sachs had a tweet the other day that I thought was really interesting, talking about, like, the 2 different kinds of red aggressive decks or red white aggressive decks in the format, and that like some want Tormentor's Helm and some want Run Amok. And I do think I have deck composition as a consideration here, and I think that's something to think about, especially with these aggro decks. Like you have to have a lot of creatures, and then you're playing your removal spells, right? You're playing your Demon Bolts and your Frostbite, and that only gives you a handful of slots for these creature augmentation spells. And I think it's really important to ask yourself, what your deck is doing in terms of, do I want those augmentation spells to be equipment or do I want them to be combat tricks? And so Run Amok, really, really strong, I think, especially in conjunction with Craven Hulk. But then you might have decks where those slots are going to be allocated elsewhere.
We've got Breakneck Berserker last on the list here. It's the 3-mana, 3-2 haste. If you want to beat down, Breakneck Berserker is going to be a good card in your deck.
Looking at filler here, we've got Cinderheart Giant, the 7-mana, 7-6. Fearless Pup, a 1-drop. Hoggy Mob as your 5-mana, 5-4, I guess, gets bumped up if you've got the Black Rune to get mowed down with that machine gun. And Vault Robber, honestly, I feel like this could just be an unplayable territory. Vault Robber has been weird to me in the format.
Not great.
Yeah.
And then in the unplayable sideboard category, we've got Open the Omnipass, that's the +1/+0 to your team, or, you know, Ritual effect, just doesn't really have a home. Shackles of Treachery, the Act of Treason effect. And again, you know, Shackles has been real with more equipment floating around. I think I would maybe, you could think about doing this in the main if you were hyper aggressive, but I think generally probably best out of the sideboard against equipment stuff.
Okay.
And Smashing Success, destroy target artifact or land, don't play it.
All right, rounding things out here with green. Good in every deck. Only one card, but it is the best card, Seraph's Packmate.
It is the best boy.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to top tier. We've got a lot here in green. Horizon Seeker, that's the 2 and a G, 3-2 with Boast for 1 and a green that lets you search up a land, which lets you get snow lands, which is also very powerful, you know, if you didn't quite get there on the fixing for your snow deck or the number of snow lands that you would have liked.
Well, and the other reason the Horizon Seeker is so good is, again, like, it's just good if you end up in, like, red-green aggro or green-white aggro. Like, these 3-mana 3-2s that can provide value like this and the Firewalker, they're just so good. Good on attacks and good on defense. We got like a bunch of snow stuff here. Glittering Frost, Sculptor of Winter, and Icehide Troll here. I know a lot of people might think Icehide Troll like good in every deck or something. Like, yeah, again, we're talking about taking snowlands over a lot. All three of these cards, maybe?
I would take snowlands over all three of these cards in pack one. I think I would take Glittering Frost over non-green and blue snowlands, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's about
where
right.
I would draw the line.
Mm-hmm. But these snow cards are just really, really strong. And most of the time, that's what green is doing.
Right. And then once you get the snow lands and you have 7 or 8 snow lands, then in packs 2 and 3, either maybe you're still wielding these cards, in which case your deck is absurd, or then you have the snow lands locked up and you can take Icehide Troll aggressively in pack 3 if you want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this list just keeps on coming. We got the fight spell here, Struggle for Skemphar. Now, I find these fight spells to be largely interchangeable. Thinking about Struggle and then the two uncommons in Arnie Slays the Troll and Blizzard Brawl. So, like, I just feel like if I'm in green, I'm going to get a fight spell at some point. And Struggle is good and probably better in the more aggressive decks. So you can do that sort of Foretell on 2, 2 drop, fight on 3 curve out.
Yeah, I have been impressed, I think, with Arnie Slays the Troll quite a bit recently. It's come up a little bit for me from my opponents. When it goes off and does all 3 chapters, it's pretty backbreaking if you were in any sort of a racing situation.
It's so good as a splash in snow decks. Like, that's where you stabilize with your 5-5 or your 6-6, then you fight. And then if you can get to the chapter where you then gain 5 life, then you feel like you can't lose.
Right. The game is over at that point. So I would say that's a cut above the other two, but I do agree that Blizzard Brawl and Struggle are like totally interchangeable. Masked Vandal is a pretty sweet one. I've been singing this card's praises. This is 1 green for 1/3 changeling. And when it ETBs, if you exile a creature from your graveyard, you get to blow up an artifact or an enchantment. You know, the ability that have this be relevant in, you know, your snow decks or whatever, your green defensive deck, that you can play it against aggro and it's not an embarrassing blocker, and to also be relevant in the late game to be able to blow up an artifact or an enchantment is just a very good card, I think.
Yeah. And last on this list is Ravenous Lindworm. You know, I really love this move from the Colossal Dreadmaw variant to the 6-6 that gains you 4 variant, because this just closes the door on aggro decks. Like, this does 2 things at once, like buffs your life total and presents a thing that they really can't deal with.
Yep. Love Ravenous Lindworm.
And so, like, the only, you know, things to consider here, why they're not good in every green deck. You know, sometimes you're a green white aggro or red green aggro deck and you don't want a 6-drop. Sometimes you're a green white aggro deck or a red green aggro deck and you don't want a 2-mana 1/3 in Masked Vandal. You know, these are the things you want to think about.
Moving on to most contextual, we've got Elderleaf Mentor, 3 and a green, 3/2. When it ETBs, you get a 1/1. This is good. I mean, fine. It's almost filler-ish, except it's above filler in elf decks, I think.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, you know, if you want 2 bodies, whatever. We talked about Trickster God's Heist or Carter's Vicious Return, that type of deal. Card that's moved up for me, like, I would have probably put this as filler earlier, but Knotfold Recluse, like, there's 3-mana 4/2 with reach. been good. If you care about your curve, if you care about defensive speed, I've liked that card quite a bit.
It's just good stats on a three drop as an attacker or a blocker.
Right. Being able to take out their 3-2 flyer or their 4-4 Craven Hulk, that feels good.
Grizzled Outrider, that's the 4 and a green 5-5. You know, 5-5 is large in the format. This is often the biggest boy other than Ravenous Lindworm. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you should be playing this card more than you are, would be my guess.
Yeah, it's like the only card that has only flavor text or something, but it really just has large in the text box, you know? Guardian Gladewalker, again, if you care about curve, we've already talked about dropping that counter somewhere, if that matters with you with a Raptor. Do you care about types, like this being a 2-mana giant for your squash or starting your changeling train? Like this has a lot of homes in the format.
Yeah, the changelings, I think anything with changeling on it has massively overperformed my expectation of changeling going into the format.
I agree.
King Herald's Revenge is up next. It's the 2 and a G. Give your creature +1/+1 at sorcery speed for each creature you control. And it also gains trample. And then a creature an opponent controls must block if able. Saw a tweet from Ryan Sachs where he called this an edict variant on Searing Blaze, which is pretty high praise. I mean, you can get blown out by instant speed interaction, but when this card does the thing, it's very powerful.
This is going to be the number one card that the ratio of me dying to it versus casting it is going to be the biggest delta. Like, I have lost this card a lot, but I haven't played it that much myself. But I think it's a key piece for green aggressive decks.
Yes, especially in green white. You know, you and I recently had a showdown video, and I included a Herald's Revenge over one of the green fight spells, the Struggle for Skemphar, and it won me a game that would have otherwise been completely unwinnable.
I think a lesser combat trick, but a combat trick nonetheless, Mammoth Growth. Again, do you want to be aggressive? Are you trying to go wide? So like, you know, some unblocked 1-1 or 2-2 then can finally finish off your opponent for those 4 extra points of damage.
Yeah, it's been impressive. You frequently have to think about this card when you're blocking against green decks.
Mm-hmm.
Snakeskin Veil as the 1 green +1/+1 counter and Hexproof. I think you're only really excited to play this card if you've got bombs that you really want to protect. And even then, it feels almost more of a sideboard card to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. There's also like, I've seen green white double spell stuff if you get Clarion Spirits. And so then you're just interested in 1-mana tricks too. And Broken Wings. I think, again, if your removal suite isn't that good going into your main deck, then I think including this is gonna find a home. You feel like you're soft to flyers. Putting this in your main deck doesn't feel that bad. Like, I think this is, we're on main deck material here for Broken Wings sometimes.
I agree. Moving on to the filler category, breaks my heart. We've got Mox Diamond here. Jasperous Sentinel, green for a 1-2 reach, and you can tap it to add a mana of any color mana to your mana pool if you tap another untapped creature. This has a home, I think, but a lot of things have to line up. You have to be elves. You have to care about elves, have a very good curve, and care about adding multicolors of mana. And I did have that once, but I don't think it comes together very frequently.
Yeah, I feel bad because I've played a lot of multicolored green decks, and I have not cast a Jasperous Sentinel yet. I'm not on the Mox Diamond truth.
Moving on to the unplayable sideboard, we've got Roots of Wisdom and Arachniform. Neither of these cards are very good.
All right, that brings us to colorless. Just a few cards to talk about here. Good in every deck. Snowlands, baby. Like we sort of ranked them before, I think. Shimmerdrift Veil greater than the blue-green duels, greater than the rest, and then greater than white, which sort of feels like snow wastes a little bit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that can change depending on the rare payoffs and the uncommon payoffs that you get, right? Mm-hmm. If you pack one, pick one, Blood on the Snow, all of a sudden black shoots ahead of right. blue-green, right? Because you really want to play your Blood on the Snow and have the requisite number of snowlands. So I think this is like a default in a vacuum, and then be aware that like as you shift towards base colors, and you know, you should be 2 base colors in your snow decks, ideally,
yes.
And try to not have them meld into a 3-color pile or a 4-color pile. Like, as you start to hone in on what your base colors are, shift your pick order for which colors of snowlands you're picking appropriately. And you should always be trying to figure that out while you're drafting snow.
Agree. And you know, even talking about the snow plains as snow wastes isn't perhaps fair. You know, you can think about, well, I've got a Path to the World Tree and I've got a Master Scald because I have a Saga and this could also get back Path. And so I want to be able to fetch up a white mana, and you would prefer that white mana to be a snow mana. And so then if you can get that snow plains, that's good. So, you know, there are considerations for all these cards, but just like we are really taking these snowlands, especially Veil and the blue-green duels, really high and basically ahead of everything that wasn't good in every deck category here.
Right. And one other thing to add, I think once you know what your base colors are, or even if you're guessing what your base colors are going to be, and you have those ways like Path or Horizon Seeker or Spirit of the Alderguard, the ability to fetch up a basic that's untapped is also pretty important. So if I don't have basics of the colors, there's times later in the draft where you'll pick the basics over the duels to be able to fetch up an untapped source.
Yeah, for sure.
Moving on to top tier, we've got Raven's Wings. This is the 2-mana artifact and gives the equipped creature +1/+0 and flying for 2 mana. I think this is very good in any deck that wants to attack and be aggressive.
For sure. It's so funny. I was building my sealed pool yesterday for the CFB event, and I didn't end up with a Broken Wings in my deck, and I really wish. I think Broken Wings is probably top tier main deck inclusion in green sealed decks, because I think everyone should be playing Raven Wings in their sealed decks. You know, you open one, should make it into your deck.
It's the Cobbled Wings, Lords of Limited Tech.
Exactly. Most contextual here, we've got Scorn Effigy up first. You know, this is better than Ornithopter in Sheep's Clothing, as I called it, but not by much. But you know, I think it does allow you to do some good double spell stuff for free. I think even as just like colorless defensive speed in some decks isn't bad. Like if I'm just looking for a blocker, it might have taken too many snow lands and spell lands at uncommon that I need a couple more playables to round out my deck. 2-mana 2/3 that has suspend and cost 0 is pretty good.
Yeah. Next up, we've got Gold Vein Pick, and we've talked a lot about this. I could see it belonging in top tier. Like maybe we're just wrong, or maybe we're a little bit behind and we haven't seen what Deathsea's seen. Mm-hmm. But for right now, we're going to leave it in most contextual.
And Raider's Carve, we've talked about having a home in the Ox Plow deck, and I think that's really its only home for my money.
Yes, I agree. And lastly, in the filler category, Smuggler's Copter is not back, baby.
No.
Funeral Longboat, 2-mana for the 3/3 with crew 1.
Yeah, no, I'm never looking to put this in any deck.
Could you say that somebody said that on our preview episode?
You want to do this? What cards that you have evaluated incorrectly? You want to talk about Packmate not being in your top 3 green commons?
We could talk about that.
Okay.
I would willingly admit that I was wrong.
I will throw the gloves off here, my friend.
All right, that's a great place to wrap up our episode before Ethan and I end up in fisticuffs. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to ChannelFireball.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you are heading over to CFB for any and all purchases, signing up for CFB Pro, please use the code LOL when you check out to let them know we sent you there. You can check us out streaming. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome, both under those same usernames on Twitter. And you can tweet at us at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.